This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Sean Sherman is a chef who tries to revive Native American foodways by not using colonial ingredients.
Dairy, wheat flour, cane sugar, even beef, pork, and chicken, because those ingredients did not exist in these land spaces not that long ago.
Sherman says it's gluten-free and every other healthy diet you might think of. Plus, the African-American community in Bloomington Normal reflects on revived trauma and skepticism about the coming verdict from the Derek Chauvin trial in Minnesota. Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason slow rolls a search for a new police chief, and the shortage of restaurant workers in Bloomington Normal grows oh so much worse. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County health officials report a record 51 residents hospitalized with COVID-19. That comes as Bloomington Normal Hospital bed capacity constricted to just 1% of all beds available. The McLean County Health Department reports 99 new COVID cases. The testing positivity rate is down slightly at 5.5%. The active caseload rose back above 600. It's now 618, with 567 people isolating at home. The county's death toll held at 213. The restaurant worker shortage that began as pandemic restrictions began to lift early this year is now a lot worse. And Rob Dobbs restaurant owner Bob Dobsky says there is a lot of wage pressure as a result.
Right now, if you're going to get any kind of consistency, you've got to be paying, you know, kitchen help $13, $14 an hour for some good experience, you know, grill people, chefs, and all that.
That's several dollars above the minimum wage. Dobsky and others say that may not even be enough to compete with places like Target, which now has a $15 an hour starting wage. Ken Mishka of Epiphany Farm says his restaurants are open only 60% of the hours he would like because he's short 30 people. Caterpillar will maintain its quarterly cash dividend of $1.03 per share. Caterpillar has paid out a quarterly dividend since 1933. The company reported $41.7 billion in 2020 sales and revenue. Illinois lawmakers say two new bills will provide protection against source-of-income-based housing discrimination. State Representative LaShawn Ford says these bills are needed, particularly for communities of color.
Source-income discrimination is often, we've learned, a proxy for racial discrimination with Black and Latinx households. We need source-of-income protection to make Illinois a more just and equitable place.
The bill will protect women with disabilities, people of color, and veterans from being denied housing solely because of their source of income. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
The first time I tried hearing aids, it was too overwhelming. But then once I didn't have them, then it was kind of like, oh, I kind of miss hearing some of those sounds.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Communities of color battle with a loss of hope as they seek justice in the death of George Floyd, another Black man who died at the hands of a white police officer. Student reporter Tiffany Jackson talks with African-American leaders in Bloomington Normal about what they've seen and what they want to see at Derek Chauvin's murder trial. And she talks with police in Bloomington Normal who say they also want bad cops removed from the ranks.
Bloomington Normal Black Lives Matter leader Olivia Butt says, watching white police officer Derek Chauvin stand trial for the killing of George Floyd felt like reliving the tragedy again.
It kind of transported me back to those initial feelings that a lot of folks had in the summer of 2020. So having the trial now is just kind of reopening some of those old wounds that haven't healed for a lot of people and just reminding folks that justice has not been done. And we're reminded of that every day that this trial continues.
Prosecutors in the Chauvin trial have tried to demonstrate the veteran officer has a history of using excessive force. NAACP President Linda Foster says the organization is taking time to take in all the evidence revealed at the trial, but she questions Officer Chauvin's motives even more now.
We've seen what we've seen up front, but to hear about the training and the history of this police officer, obviously there was some hidden agendas. It was never intended for Mr. Floyd to make it through it.
As Illinois State University nears the end of its semester, its black students are also coping with emotions from the trial. Black Student Union President Lexi Epp says juggling schoolwork and surviving COVID all while trying to stay informed is a lot of stress, but Epps tries to stay positive. She says the trial has demonstrated Chauvin's guilt, but if the verdict comes back not guilty, she won't be shocked.
If, God forbid, it comes back not guilty, I think this is just going to hurt the black community once again. But unfortunately, this is something that we've been through. And there's a lot of us where we have no faith in the justice system now as it is. But I feel like for the people that have like that little tiny hope that he's going to get convicted, and if he doesn't, I think that's just going to completely erase it from here on out.
During the trial, Chauvin's lawyers have tried to attribute Floyd's drug intake and other health problems as the real cause of death. Angel Howard, coordinator of professional development at Illinois State University, says that defense confirms what she calls the racialized drug craze rhetoric people use to excuse violent behavior towards people of color is still alive, and it's proven that her black skin is a threat.
As a black person, as a black woman, I already know how folks feel about me. And there's only been more proof to pile onto that to confirm that what I believe is true. I'm looking for people to prove me wrong. Nobody's proved me wrong yet.
Minneapolis Police Chief Madaria Arredondo condemned Chauvin's actions during his trial testimony, and other department officers spoke out as well. Angel Howard at ISU says she was surprised officers broke their so-called blue wall of silence, but she wonders if the jury will find the police chief's testimony as credible, since it's coming from a person of color.
I didn't expect that to be said because it does seem to be a lot of solidarity in just protecting the system of policing. But even though it's being said, one of those things was done by a black man. So is blue just as important on a black body?
Bloomington Interim Police Chief Greg Scott says he wasn't surprised that officers in Minneapolis are speaking out against Chauvin's actions. He says Chauvin was wrong and that his actions have amplified the distrust that communities of color already feel towards police.
When I first got hired, that would have surprised me, but law enforcement has been changing over the years, so it's really not surprising. And when somebody steps out of line and does something that's just wrong, it reflects so poorly on all of us. You have to say something.
Scott says breaking through public perception is hard, but he says he's ready to prove everyone wrong.
I think we've been under an extra measure of scrutiny. However, I think most of the community at large respect us. That's not to say that we can't improve. So we're eager to do better. And quite honestly, it hurts when we see those bad things happen.
Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner says his officers agree what Chauvin did was wrong. Bleichner says he doesn't like that Chauvin's action unfairly gives all cops a bad name.
I would hope that as we move forward that we get away from the whole broad brush painting and want to have more local conversations with your police departments. That's where we're really impacted, right? I mean, we see things on a national level, but we're not in Minneapolis. We're in Normal, Illinois.
ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff says officers have a duty to speak out when their colleagues dishonor the badge. He says that's what's happened here. Woodruff says policing a college campus and building relationships with students of color is a challenge because of what he sees as a cycle of mistrust.
The struggle with us on a college campus is we're going to have a whole bunch of new students coming in who have their own experiences and their own distrust, and we start that process all over again.
Linda Foster with the NAACP says she was surprised and more hopeful after hearing the officers condemn Chauvin. She says if more officers spoke out against wrongdoing across the country, the distrust against police would start to fade.
I am so proud of how the law enforcement in Minnesota and how they're coming out, and they are clearly stating that what occurred is not what they've been trained to do. And so we continue to hear that. I believe that every community is going to be a better community.
ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff says he joins communities of color in the hope for justice in this case.
Everything I've seen leads me to believe that there will probably be some type of conviction based on just the facts that I have heard. So I would be surprised if he wasn't convicted of at least something.
Not knowing what reactions to expect after the verdict, Bloomington Interim Police Chief Greg Scott says the department is prepared for possible protests, but he says he doesn't expect any problems.
We've got plans in place and hopefully don't have to enact any of it. We support people coming out and expressing their view and how they feel about it. And the only time we're going to get involved is when it crosses the line into something that's illegal or unsafe.
Olivia Butts with Black Lives Matter says last summer the group didn't have to organize many protests because the community came together on its own after George Floyd was killed. Butts says she's waiting to hear what the community wants first before making plans after the verdict.
I am just hoping that we'll be led to see what the community wants. If people just want a space to come together and have some type of vigil to grieve, or if people are more interested in talking about action and next steps, I hope that we can be a group that gives them that space.
But it says, regardless of the outcome, America still has work to do to bridge the racial divide. I'm Tiffany Jackson.
The prosecution in the Derek Chauvin trial rested its case after 11 days of testimony. The judge expects closing arguments will begin next Monday.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Dana Vollmer with Jennifer Armstrong for the Spring Fund Drive. Your contribution at WGLT.org helps pay for some really cool stuff. Things like a local newsroom, and we're super local, like right down the street on the campus of Illinois State University.
Your support pays for award-winning journalism, Associated Press Awards, Edward R. Murrow Awards, and much, much more decorate our newsroom. That level of journalism is worthy of your financial support. Please give at WGLT.org so it can continue.
Every day, the WGLT newsroom brings you the stories that help you understand the day's news. Maybe you turn on WGLT for vaccination information, to meet the recent candidates running for office, or for election night results.
A local newsroom matters. Newspapers are shrinking. We don't have TV stations covering Bloomington Normal as in the past. WGLT and Sound Ideas brings you in-depth stories about health, community events, and newsmakers you can't hear anywhere else. When you donate at WGLT.org, your contribution powers Sound Ideas, the Leadoff Podcast, and that all-important local newsroom of award-winning journalists.
So now is a time to step up with your individual financial support at WGLT.org and pay for the news and programming that powers your day. You and your financial contribution in any amount will give this fund drive a boost and help us meet our goal.
On our website, you can make a one-time gift or set up an ongoing monthly donation. Whatever works for your budget works for us. What matters is that you contribute. Make your gift right now at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington has named a new fire chief after a five-month search, but it's been 8 months since the city's police chief position became open following Dan Donath's retirement. City Manager Tim Gleason says he still has not begun taking applications for the post, though the city's Police Civilian Review Board has surveyed the public about what it wants in a new chief. Gleason tells Eric Stock why he's taking a more deliberate approach.
It's my decision, but it's one that I want community involvement. And the decision last fall when Chief Donath retired, I want to get beyond COVID. While I could have a virtual public event, you know, introducing the two or three finalists or seeking input, you know, that exchange, and very much appreciate what the PSCRB has done with their survey. It's one of those that I prefer to do that in person. And I'm hoping that I have the ability to do that late spring, this summer. But if I don't, then I'm just going to have to move forward with this. I'm very fortunate that Greg Scott, as an interim police chief, is doing a very good job. But I am anxious to fill that position and provide some stability for the men and women at the Bloomington Police Department.
How many finalists do you expect to bring in and you want to meet and interview in person?
Well, just like last time, I like the idea of narrowing it down to two. Sometimes the candidates are so tough, you know, after those first couple of interviews, you know, you might land at three or four, which I don't think is ideal. But when I get to a point of introducing the finalists to the community, I hope the number is two.
And what are the most important qualifications that you'll be looking for in the next police chief?
The process, Eric, is going to be very similar. There is nothing has happened since we went through the selection process for Dan Donut that has really changed, you know, what I am looking for in a police chief. You know, I want a police chief that's innovative, has the capacity to talk about police reform, has the desire to be very involved in the community, but at the same time, have the backs of the men and women that are doing this job 24/7, you know, amidst some of the criticisms that are occurring nationally, and even some of those trickle down here at the local level, even though I'm positive that the community knows that we've got an excellent police department, which does not take away from having that conversation and improving the services that we deliver to the community. You know, I think what we're hearing, you know, since August of 2014, Ferguson, Missouri, I think what you're hearing out of communities is they want to have a say and a higher level of understanding in how they are being policed. And we owe that to the community. So I'm definitely looking for that type of police chief that can provide that for the community.
Is there a cutoff date where you say we can't wait for in person, we're just going to have to move forward with it?
I think the cutoff date in my mind, and it's not etched in stone, but I'm really anxious to start this process, let's say mid to late May. You got a 30-day posting. You're doing interviews throughout the month of July, hopefully a selection by early August, let's say 30 or 45 days for that candidate, if it's from the outside, to relocate. And I would love to have somebody in place by early to mid September.
That's Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason with Eric Stock. Gleason came to city administration after a 25-year career in law enforcement. Gleason now serves as a member of the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board. This is the WGLT Spring Fund Drive. You can donate to keep the news and information you value on the air at WGLT.org. Sean Sherman grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. His pantry was often stocked with government rations like salt, flour, and cheese, foods that bore no connection to his Oglala Dakota heritage. Sherman's a chef who now revives lost traditions and food systems. He's doing virtual events with the ISU Horticulture Center today. In this interview with WGLT correspondent Sarah Nardi, Sherman talks about the surprising number of things he does not use because those colonial ingredients came from Europe.
Yeah, we just wanted to set up food situations that were really representative of where we were. So trying to create culturally and regionally appropriate foods. So we stopped using things like dairy, wheat flour, cane sugar, even beef, pork, and chicken, because those ingredients did not exist on these land spaces not that long ago. And we started just creating recipes using all this wonderful food around us. So it was a study in agricultural foods, what kind of seeds were people utilizing, and are those seeds still out there? And then finding some native farmers that are still growing a lot of these cool heirloom varietals. And then just a huge study of ethnobotany and understanding all these wild foods that constantly surround our environments and really reconnecting with a lot of these plants. When you really start to learn the names of the plants around you, you start to see nothing but food and medicine everywhere, just as our ancestors did from our indigenous families.
pre-pandemic, you were in the process of opening a restaurant in Minneapolis, along with an education center. Where are you with that now?
So we opened up a nonprofit kitchen called Indigenous Food Lab in South Minneapolis, and we're just a few blocks from where the George Floyd murder site happened. So we started right during that time period, and we started doing food relief because we just really wanted to help out our community. So we started pushing out 400 healthy Indigenous meals a day back then. But really what we're set up to do is to really just become a center for, you know, learning and educating, research and development and training, because what we want to do is work with tribes, help them to develop their own Indigenous culinary programming and be able to do that over and over. So we're helping kitchens everywhere do that same work. And we're also right just a few weeks out really from opening up our first brick and mortar in downtown Minneapolis along the riverfront, along the Mississippi. So the restaurant that we're opening is going to be called Awamini as a part of our sous chef family. And Awamini is the Dakota name for the waterfalls that used to be downtown Minneapolis before they were destroyed by industry in the kind of around the turn of the century. And it's just a really beautiful sacred spot. The word Awamini comes from the word Awamini Yamini, which meant place of the swirling waters, which was where these waterfalls were. And those waterfalls were so sacred to the Dakota people that were from here that they named the entirety of the Mississippi, which is obviously a huge river, the River of the Falls, or Hahawakpa, just to show you how special that space is that our restaurant overlooks.
You mentioned George Floyd, and I'm curious how much of your work centers around social justice, around the idea of access and food justice.
Well, you know, that's what I grew up with, and that's what a lot of the people on our team. We have a lot of Indigenous people on our culinary team, and we just really believe that food is something that everybody should have. You know, nutrition shouldn't be dictated by your skin color or your zip code. And we just really want to just normalize healthy Indigenous food, which is why we've been making such a big push to get healthy Indigenous foods directly into tribal communities and helping to normalize the sense of what is modern Indigenous food, which just happens to be really healthy, because since we cut out those colonial ingredients, you know, we're gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, soy-free, pork-free. And it's kind of like what every diet out there is trying to mimic.
Chef Sean Sherman spoke with correspondent Sarah Nardi. Sherman's book, The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, won the 2018 James Beard Award for Best American Cookbook. This is the WGLT Spring Fund Drive. You can contribute to support the news and information you use at WGLT.org. Theater students at Normal Community High School are anxious to perform in person after so much lost to the pandemic. The spring production, cross your fingers, will be in person. It'll be out of doors at the Connie Link Amphitheater in Normal. Director Kevin Vernon says sports teams have to do things to be safe during the pandemic, and so do theater troops.
One of the reasons we picked this show is because it's a series of small one acts, and we can put two and three people on stage at a time in masks and distanced. All the blocking has them as much as we can possibly get for 6 feet apart. Not a lot of touching. This was the show that would work for that, so they are doing all that in rehearsals. It is our hope that numbers are still good and they are going to get to take their masks off just to perform on stage, but every other minute they put it on. So we're trying to get people tested. We do have some kids quarantining because just life happened to them and the school nurse has identified them as close contact. So we're taking it very seriously.
Absence may not only make the heart grow fonder, but it may also lend a new appreciation for what you had been doing in-person theater instruction and theater performance. Do you have a fresh eye on the nature of in-person theater coming back to it now?
I think so. I think I have a greater appreciation of how much of a role the audience plays. I've always taught that it's not theater unless it has an audience. We can create a lot of things, but the audience is an active participant, and it means so much more. It's frankly, it's the backbone of what the art is. It is communication. It is an expression of whatever humanity is. Even in a comedy like these one acts, it's still a communication about this is who we are and you're this too and we're in this together. It feels more momentous. It feels more important.
How are the students taking to it? What is their emotional experience been returning to in-person rehearsals and in-person production of real theater?
They have been so great. They are obeying all the rules. They are working extra hard. They were memorized. The actors were memorized in advance. The techies had things already built. It's like they're so grateful for that opportunity. They appreciate it so much more. And they're having fun. They look happy again. It's almost an identity. If I don't know that I can remember that far back in history, but when I was in high school, it's that perpetual search for who you are. And these people, they're a theater company. And to be able to identify with your people, to be able to do what we do again, they have just been so great about it.
What are they telling you about the emotional impact of what they're doing now?
They feel home. Home gets mentioned a lot. Family gets mentioned a lot, as in your extended family. They really appreciate the fact that what they do is important, is special, is worthwhile, and how much they enjoy it.
Kevin Vernon is the theater director at Normal Community High School, which is producing All in the Timing, a series of one acts by David Ives, at 6:30 p.m. April 16th and 17th at the Connie Link Amphitheater in Normal. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. You can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories and make a contribution at WGLT.org.